It's 8 o'clock. This is KBNF Regional News for Friday, June 17th. I'm Patricia Naft. A Western Slope Electric co-op secured a major win Thursday. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission ruled in favor of the Delta Montrose Electric Association. The ruling means DMEA can purchase locally produced power without having to pay Tri-State for lost revenue. Tri-State was challenging an earlier decision that gave DMEA the go-ahead to purchase more local power. KBNF's Laura Pomisano spoke to John Heledick, the director of policy for the Center of Rural Affairs, about the ruling and its impact.
What's the history behind this ruling with DMEA and Tri-State?
When Congress passed the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act in 1978, they included a provision that said if there's a qualified facility that can produce energy at a low cost in your area, those utilities, especially the public power utilities, are going to have to purchase that energy. And that made sense at the time because we were just beginning to see wind turbines and solar power in a scalable way. But for decades afterwards, those energy sources weren't affordable for many. So even though this provision in PURPA existed, not a lot of people were taking advantage of it, and not a lot of utilities had to consider it. And so when those utilities began to sign all requirements contracts with larger entities like Tri-State, qualified facilities weren't something that we had to think about. All that's changed now. Now that clean energy is much more affordable, now that it's much more available, and now that there is so much more demand, it's entirely possible, and in fact we're seeing it happen regularly, that there's going to be somebody, whether it's an organization or a different cooperative or a company or an individual, able to produce power within that electric cooperative's district at a low price. And according to PURPA and according to this act in 1978, entities like Delta Montrose are going to have to purchase that power. And that's the issue that was at stake in this debate.
What does this decision mean for both electric providers?
Well, this decision means a lot. There's two ways to look at it. On the one hand, you look at what this means for the future of energy by itself. And on the other hand, what does this mean for the future of public power? So let's start off with the first. This means that solar energy is going to expand within the jurisdiction of Delta Montrose and within the jurisdictions of so many more electric cooperatives nationwide. And that's exciting. This is going to encourage development of solar energy and wind energy, and this is going to give those individuals who have put in the time and the money a place to sell that power and a market for the power that they're creating. On the other hand, what does this mean for the energy uses of Tri-State? Well, Tri-State is a very good example of a G&T who has absolutely committed themselves to burning coal. So much has happened in the last decade that makes coal unappealing. The prices are higher. We're much more aware of the consequences of coal use on the environment. And challenges such as transportation have risen the cost even more. And so we're at a point now where we're able to fully take advantage of alternatives to coal energy. But if you're a G&T like Tri-State, who have really adhered themselves to coal energy, you're in a tough spot. That's something that you thought you were going to make millions and millions and millions on for decades to come, and maybe that's not so true anymore.
Last year, FERC ruled in favor of DMEA. How is this decision different?
Well, there's an important distinction between the two. So last year when the court ruled in favor of DMEA, they were essentially saying, all right, at a bare minimum, according to PURPA, that's a qualified facility. They must be able to buy from that qualified facility. That's the end of the story. Well, that wasn't enough for Tri-State. Tri-State wanted to make the argument that this was somehow going to cost Tri-State a lot of money. And even though DMEA was able to, and essentially had to, buy from this qualified facility, that was going to put Tri-State out in some way because they would have made money from DMEA, and now they're not going to make that money anymore. So the difference between the price of the electricity that Tri-State produced and sold to DMEA and the price that they were charging DMEA is something that Tri-State wanted back. It's important that the court agreed with DMEA in this situation because had they not, any good parts, any win, any positive signs from the court's first ruling would have been immediately undermined. So it was almost punitive. Tri-State was asking for something that looked a lot like punitive damages based on the somewhat ridiculous argument that they weren't going to make as much money as they would have otherwise. Now, what came up in this decision, and is important to note, is the entirely different way the electricity system works now than it did before. Tri-State agrees it does this, and everybody knows they do this. They sell on the open market to anybody, anytime they want to. And that's a place where they're actually making money. That's different than the role we expect our public power producers to serve. And so if they're over there and they can sell power on the open market and they can make money that way and they can act like they're this big business, then they can't turn around and, as the same company, say, you know, anybody who doesn't buy from us should be punished because we expect to make that money. They can't have it both ways. And the court recognized that correctly.
That was Jonathan Hladek with Center for Rural Affairs speaking to KVNF's Laura Pomisano. Arch Coal filed an updated version of its plan to get out of bankruptcy on Wednesday. Inside Energy's Lee Patterson reports that this legal wrangling is the company's latest to get everyone to agree on repayment.
Arch Coal's new restructuring plan outlines how various creditors would be paid or not paid if the plan is approved. According to Arch, a group of its senior lenders does support the plan, but not all of the company's creditors are on board. Some have even threatened to sue. According to court documents, unsecured creditors, those are the ones who are considering litigation, are now being offered a share of some of the company's assets in the form of cash. But this lack of widespread agreement could mean trouble for Arch's exit plan, which needs to be confirmed in court in order for the company to emerge from bankruptcy. Arch Coal has mines all over the country, including in Wyoming and Colorado. It's recently laid off workers in both states, the company explained, to restructure in response to declining demand for coal. For Inside Energy, I'm Lee Patterson.
The teen accused of killing his ex-girlfriend will be tried in Larimer County following his arrest in Mesa County. Tanner Flores, according to a police affidavit, admitted to shooting his ex twice and driving the body to Colburn. The Daily Sentinel reports he drove to an old family house where he was later arrested. Governor John Hickenlooper signed several bills into law last week, including one to help prevent suicides. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
Colorado has one of the highest suicide rates in the country. Democratic Senator Linda Newell of Littleton was one of the main sponsors of a bill to improve how the healthcare industry treats those suffering from depression. She lost her brother to suicide.
Suicide is the seventh leading cause of death in Colorado. Very few of these professionals are getting training in suicide-specific risk assessments or suicide management.
The new law would put more money into training mental health professionals and other healthcare workers. Newell says most people who commit suicide have made many previous attempts, and more than 30% are already receiving mental health care. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
For KBNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.